Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 266, recorded the 8th of September, 2015.
Okay. Greetings, Aquarimaxers. It's not a very long episode this time.
No, we just have one person.
One contributor.
But we're very glad to have him.
Yes, indeed we are. I think we'll give a little bit of an update. We can say who it is, though.
Steve in Pittsburgh.
Welcome, Steve.
He's new, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We do have a couple of things to mention, like the continuing story of the axolotl.
She seems to be doing well.
She's doing quite well. She's eating a staple diet of composting worms, red wigglers, whatever you want to call them, that our daughter is culturing under my direction. She's doing a good job with that. We have been able to feed the axolotl. It's still a bit skittish, but we got to see it eat again in front of us there. Sometimes it eats after we leave, but this time we got to see it strike once and then a little later catch the worm and eat it. So, working well. The temperature has done pretty well. We've noticed a sharp decrease in temperature in the past week or two.
Just since Monday.
Has it been Monday? Yesterday?
Yesterday. It was just, or maybe it was Sunday.
Well, it hasn't been very long.
But it was cold all of a sudden.
Yeah, but even before that, it was cooler.
Yeah, it wasn't as hot.
Yeah, and now it's just, fall is here all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
The temperature in the axolotl tank is about 69 degrees right now, which is perfectly fine for an axolotl. So hopefully, considering that we've gotten through the hottest part of the year and it never went over 74, I think we're good. And it was usually 72 or below, so.
I think it should work fine.
Oh, this is the other thing we wanted to do. We wanted to do sort of an Aquarimax poll. This is kind of weird.
Survey.
But you know that in addition to keeping fish and other aquatic creatures, we also keep various terrestrial invertebrates and other things. Invertebrates, you know, various things. At any rate, one of the things that we keep are isopods. So we would like to know what you called them when you were a child and where you grew up. We want to get as many different answers as possible. So we're going to post it to the Aquarimax Facebook page. We'd like you to go on there. If you haven't already liked the page, you just do a search for Aquarimax and like the page. And then
we'll put a couple of pictures up.
And then you say, okay, when I was a child, I called this, and I grew up in wherever you grew up. And just do that. And we want to see how many different responses we get and if there are variations from different areas. I've started this and posted this on a couple of forums and gotten some interesting answers, but I want to get some more. And we have some Aquarimaxers from lots of different places in the world. So if you grew up in a country where English is not the principal language and you learned the name of those creatures in that language, we would love to hear that one too, and it's translation into English. For example, in Italian, one of the names that they're referred to as, or with the names with which they are referred to, oh, I just messed that up.
One of the things people call them.
I lost what I was saying. Anyway, where was I?
I think you just got a part-time job at the Sizzler with Weird Al.
Okay. Anyway, one of the terms that people use to refer to such creatures is Porcellini di Sant'Antonio, which means basically little Saint Anthony's little pigs, which is a pretty awesome name. So see that, I thought that one was fun. If you have another language that you would like to tell us about, that would be cool too. Mm-hmm. Or if you called them, you know, something in English first, whatever, just let us know. We would be interested. So we will post that on the Aquarimax Facebook page. Please go there and respond. All right.
Shall we go to Steve in Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Okay. He says, I've been enjoying your podcast for months now after learning about it on Reddit's Aquarium Forum. Since I have a long hour and a half drive to work, I'm sorry. That's too long, you poor thing. Yeah. Aquarimax keeps me from veering off into traffic to make the boredom end in a fiery explosion. I'm glad we have prevented your death.
Yeah, especially your fiery death.
Yeah.
Fiery explosive death.
Unfortunately, I recently lost my neon blue dwarf Garami. I had just tried a new food pellet, New Life Spectrum 3, is that millimeters?
Millimeters.
3 millimeters. Uh-huh. And it was larger than I expected. The next day he looked a little swollen and pine-coned, and by the day after that he had died from dropsy. I hate dropsy.
That is one of the most
awful ways
to have a fish go.
Water parameters are perfect. Everybody else in the tank was perfectly fine. It's a 47-gallon column with 3 angelfish, 6 black neon tetras, a Bolivian ram, and a whisker shrimp. My only idea of what went wrong is that the large pellet formed a blockage inside him. Have you guys ever heard of something like this happening before?
Okay. Well, let's talk about this for a minute. The first thing I'd like to mention is that usually dropsy does not develop as a result of,
trauma.
Can I say this? Right. Dropsy can develop for a number of reasons. And basically, it's the buildup of fluid in the body cavity, and it can relate to kidney failure. So it causes that buildup of fluid. But the root cause can be mycobacteriosis.
Which we hate.
It's an awful, awful thing. But mycobacteriosis does not develop quickly. And by that, I need to qualify that statement a little bit. The onset of the disease, you might not notice when a fish starts to get the granulomas, the little bodies inside of it. And the disease can progress for quite a while without looking like much. Suddenly, though, it will hit a point where it will kind of balloon out and, you know, swell up and die. And that can happen suddenly, but if it does happen suddenly from mycobacteriosis, the fish has been sick for a long time. Does that make sense?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. So typically, by the time, if, you know, usually the dropsy is caused by mycobacteriosis, and that's not the only cause, but usually it is. And that does mean the fish has been sick for a long time. Now, the fact that your other fish are perfectly fine actually is not too surprising, because, you know, fish can develop some resistance to mycobacteriosis, and neon blue dwarf gouramis actually happen to be in the group of more susceptible fish than some others. They also happen to be a fish with a fairly weak constitution.
That's too bad, because they're pretty.
They are, but from what I understand, the cultivars or the color varieties of dwarf gouramis are often fairly poorly treated. I believe some of them are treated with hormones in the fish farms before they get to the pet stores to brighten their colors, but that can weaken them and different things like that. I don't have any documentation of that, but that's what I've heard. And so it's not too surprising that your other fish would look fine and this fish would be suffering. And I'm not sure, you didn't mention, I don't think, when you got the dwarf gourami, but I don't think it had to do with the food. I could be wrong there, but that's kind of where I'm going with it. New Life Spectrum is a good food. I like it. I've used it quite a bit, and I think it's a great food. But the fact that he got, you know, a big pellet could possibly cause some issues for him, but it would most likely be something that would happen really quickly, because if he were, you know, if it were causing a blockage in his throat or something and made it impossible for enough water to pass through over his gills so that he could breathe, things like that, that would have probably happened more quickly. And once he gets it down into his stomach and it starts to, it will have taken on some water by then, taken on more water, and probably not be hard enough to cause a problem. That's kind of my
take on it. It will soften up.
Take on it. Yeah, it would be kind of soft.
Okay.
So, though I cannot be sure, those are my 2 cents on the matter.
Okay. Very good. He also says, my other question is related to a betta I recently purchased. My little 5-gallon tank was empty after my Scarlet Baddest died.
You like those. I do too.
I kind of remember the name. I don't remember what they look like.
They're those tiny little ones that look kind of like a tiny little betta, sort of.
Oh, really?
A little perch-like fish. And they're brightly colored and they're active and interesting. You like them a lot.
Okay. So I rescued a half-moon elephant ear betta from one of the big box stores so he could be free of his half-cup prison. He quickly brightened up and changed from a faint pink to bright red. I was glad to see him doing so well, but now his beautiful fins are starting to tear. The water parameters are very good, with maybe the occasional slight uptick in nitrates, but never more than that. I do have some large rocks in the tank, and the canister filter's flow does occasionally give him some trouble. He also tangles himself up in the mass of Java moss sometimes. I've never had a betta before, so I'm unsure about what the chances are that one or any of these different variables could be causing the ripping. He says, I hope everything's going great on your end and with the new axes, and a big shout out to Matt in Perth, Tony in New York, and JB in Kentucky.
Okay. Hey, look, he signs it Pittsburgh Steve.
Well, now we have Pittsburgh Steve.
I like that.
That's good.
Cool. Okay. So.
It's like the Aquarimax Mafia.
Oh, I've got pictures. Check it out.
Oh, these are pictures of his fish. Yeah. Okay.
And you can see on some of the pictures, see like there, the fins look pretty pristine. But in some of those other pictures, you can see a little bit of ripping on the fins.
Did he just blow his tail?
And apparently he has blown his tail. Not in this picture. You know, it's not blown in any of these pictures that I can see. That one is a little harder to see the whole tail. But he mentioned that he didn't want to put the pictures in another email, I think it was. He mentioned he didn't want to put up the picture of with its tail all ruined because... it
the
was too depressing.
Be embarrassed.
It was too depressing. So, and I can totally understand that. I hate it when bettas blow their tails. And a few things. It looks like you've got some granite in there. That looks like granite to me anyway. As well as some Java moss and so on, like you said. The water parameters sound fine if it's just a little bit of nitrates. If, you know, we're talking 10, 20% nitrates here, that's not so bad. I'm not 20%. Sorry. 10 or 20 parts per million of nitrates. That's not so bad. If it's getting, you know, into the 80s or the 120s, then yeah, we need to worry. Or even 40s, I might worry. But if it's, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, I wouldn't worry too much. Bettas can certainly handle that much. I would be curious why it's so high, but as long as ammonia and nitrite are at zero, it's not that big of a deal. The large rocks may indeed be an issue.
Is he rubbing up against
them? He could be rubbing up against the rocks. And also getting tangled in the Java moss. If he gets stuck in there and he's stressing out and kind of pulling himself through, Java moss is pretty soft. But just the fact that he's rubbing against anything.
If there's something wrapped
when
around
he's,
it.
Yeah, moving around. And if it's getting kind of tying him down a little bit, that could be it. Also the flow. If the flow is pushing on him enough, that could do it. I'm imagining you have a spray bar or something in there. That's what I would say. If you don't have a spray bar in there, you might want to put one of those in and then aim it towards the glass.
Okay.
So the spray bar, when it hits the glass from, you know, it's under the water, but hitting the glass, and that should divert the flow enough.
So
it wouldn't
be
pushing on
him. So it could very well be a combination of all of those factors.
It could be a combination of all those factors. It could be one more than the other. It could be just one of them, but any of those could be it.
So should he take the rocks out and replace it with something else?
The rocks are a little rough. The granite-looking rocks are a little rough. You could consider removing those. We already talked about what to do with the canister filter. And then maybe just trim the Java moss a little bit so he can't get tangled
in
it.
Not quite so much of it.
Mm-hmm. The bad news is it takes a long time for a fish to grow back.
I know, it's sad.
A blown tail. It can take forever, and it doesn't always come back the way that it was. But I've had fish that blown their tails and then pretty much grew them back. They just don't necessarily look exactly the same. But it's a sad thing. Half moon bettas and other bettas with extremely exaggerated finnage look
it's
really cool.
More likely to get ripped though,
but
too. Yeah.
Some people have described it this way. And I don't know if this is true or not. But what they've said is that the number of cells in a half moon betta's tail are the same as that in a placot's tail, but the cells are
spread out further?
Kind of elongated or something. I don't know if that's true or not. I have no idea if that's true. But whatever is the case, because it sounds a little strange to me that you could do that, elongate a cell that much.
It would just make the tail thinner, is what you're saying.
Yeah, but what? Yeah, it does make sense, though. The tails do seem to be correspondingly more fragile, as if they're kind of stretched out in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're definitely more fragile than the tail fin of a betta with a smaller tail, and they will just sometimes seem to blow for no reason, even if you have all completely soft, innocuous decor in the tank. Sometimes they'll just blow. Especially,
they just flared it too hard.
Yeah, sometimes they'll flare it too hard, and it seems to blow it, or, you know, just one day you'll wake up and say, what happened to that tail? It's just gone. So it may not be anything at all that you're doing or anything at all environmental, too. It's also possible.
You can try those things and see if it helps.
But those may be some ways to minimize your risks. Hopefully that helps. And I think that is about it for this week, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Steve. Pittsburgh Steve.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully that helps with your betta and with your former Grammy, I guess, about what may have happened there. And may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.